CBS Radio Sports and the Baltimore Orioles welcome you to this special presentation of the Hot Stove Show.
Play ball!
This is the Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan. An hour-long look at baseball offseason transactions, player trades, deals, and the upcoming Orioles baseball season. Now, live from Dempsey's Pub at Oriole Park, here's the Hot Stove Show with Jim Hunter on the flagship station of the Orioles, 105.7 The Fan.
And welcome in, everybody. It's Hot Stove Baseball at Dempsey's at the ballpark. We are back here after a week in the studio and a nice crowd on hand, including a birthday celebration going on right in front of us, Jim and Rock. And, Rock, it was nice for the Orioles and Mark Trumbo's representatives to come together on an apparent deal just before our once-a-week show. That was so nice of them.
We're working our magic here on 105.7 The Fan. They have reached agreement with Mark Trumbo on a three-year deal that I'm told is for actually a little under $40 million. Looks like all the remains now is the physical. And I know the jokes, but Mark Trumbo is a pretty durable guy. That's not going to be a problem. But I wouldn't expect any sort of announcement tonight. But they have reached agreement on a three-year deal. Mark Trumbo is coming back to Baltimore, it looks like.
Now, it seems to me, and that's very popular here with the fans, that it could be that whatever market was out there for Mark Trumbo, and when you and I were on last week, we were talking about it, that there didn't seem to be a lot going on, and it was a very quiet week in terms of rumors with his name. But he and his representative may have come to the conclusion that this is a great place to play. Career high 47 home runs last year, at 108 RBIs, 159 games played, so he was very durable. Did go to the playoffs, although it ended in the loss in the wild card game. But it could be that this was a perfect fit for him, and after looking whatever else might have been out there, he decided, yeah, I'm going to go back.
Right. I mean, nobody was stepping up with a big 4 or 5 year offer, which we thought was a possibility when the season ended. It's interesting how the market played out. Maybe for somebody, you know, viewed mainly as one-dimensional. I think he's a better first baseman than right fielder.
Right.
But still, it's all about the power with him. And, you know, in past years, that might have been enough to get a huge deal. And this year, it seems like teams are focusing more on closers and some other things. And there are some sluggers that stayed on the market. Look what Bautista settled for at the Blue Jays. Chris Carter's still out there. And here's Mark Trumbo with his 47 home runs and another one in the wild card game. And he's going to take a three-year deal. And I say settle. It's still pretty good money. And it makes sense for both sides because he did want to come back. This was his first choice. I know ownership, I wrote right after the season, a priority was re-signing Mark Trumbo. So that kind of reminds me of the Chris Davis deal, except that I think the Orioles had to kind of bump up a little bit to get Davis. And here they still let the market play out, and Trumbo came down to them. But they did want to bring it back. A little bit of an internal tug of war, though, because as much as they did like the idea of bringing back Trumbo and not losing all that power, I know Dan Duquette liked the idea of getting that draft pick this last year before the new CBA kicks in, and he talked about maybe using a shorter-term option for a designated hitter than making the bigger commitment to Trumbo, but now we're talking 3 years. So it's not like you're looking at the seven-year deal that Chris Davis got. So I just think it works for both sides, and I would assume most fans are happy with this because it's not like it's $70 million, it's $80 million. How's this going to impact the budget? Trying to re-sign Manny Machado, I've already seen some suggestions about that. Could it hurt? This isn't, break the bank kind of money here. So, and you it would have been tough to replace those home runs, plus assuming Matt Wieters doesn't come back. There was some interest still in Pedro Alvarez, but there was no guarantee there. You could bring back a guy who is a perfect fit for this ballpark, and he's great in the clubhouse, kind of a quiet leader, and I know media especially appreciates. Not the biggest talker, but he's in front of his locker before every game, waiting if you need him. He's not a guy you have to search out or you wait for him. He never shows up. He's always there, and you approach him, and he'll, what do you need? And then he'll answer your question. So we appreciate that. He's a very good clubhouse guy, that quiet leader. And when you're losing a guy like Wieters and his leadership in there, I think it's important to bring back a guy like that.
All right, let me ask you about the familiar aspect, because we know this team, at least you and I both feel like it's built to win now. There's no doubt about it. And you mentioned the pending free agents after the 2018 season. So that's two more seasons. But we know how much Buck values how players fit in within the clubhouse. And Trumbo seamlessly fit in. He was a very popular teammate in 2016, and now will continue to be so. How much of a factor was that when you weigh all the options? And I realize the finances probably were number one. But since we know what Buck likes to have around, and Trumbo's one of those guys, it makes perfect sense to try to make sure you do whatever you can to get him back.
Right. Dance with who brung you. So what they always say, it is a guy they're familiar with and comfortable with, and they know what they're going to get from him. They've made it a priority to improve the on-base percentage. He's not that guy, but Seth Smith is, and they went ahead and got him. They were looking to upgrade their defense in right field, which Smith does, and they're still in the market for another plus defensive outfielder, preferably hits from the left side. Trumbo fills that need of that big bat, primarily in the DH slot, but somebody who could go to first base on a day that maybe Chris Davis rests or Davis DHs, or maybe Davis goes to right field for a game, and a guy who could play some right field because Seth Smith is really a platoon-type guy. He mashes right-handers but not lefties. So there's a way that, you know, Trumbo could move around a little bit, but primarily he's that big bat at the DH spot, and it makes sense on a lot of levels.
Well, he'll play every day. There's no doubt about that. So that means it's probably unlikely now Pedro Alvarez comes back because you're not going to pay what you'd have to pay him to be a pinch hitter. So now we go back to what Dan Duquette said after the Seth Smith trade, that he's still looking for another left-handed hitting outfielder, which if he does, that would make three of the five outfielders left-handed batters, with Adam Jones and Joey Rickard being the only two from the right side. So I wonder what type of player now that player will be. And does this may hurt Pedro Alvarez, but it may help Michael Bourne. Again, familiar. They know what Michael Bourne can do.
Right. I'm still a little curious about another left-handed bat, though. If you look at any kind of mock lineup, they are still heavy with right-handers, and now, of course, with Mark Trumbo especially. So now you can see, okay, you really need another left-handed bat. However, in the outfield, if Seth Smith is the guy that needs to be platooned, and we don't know if Hyun-Soo Kim needs to be, if he's going to get a chance to face lefties or not, you need a right-handed bat in there. Rickard's one guy, but you might need somebody else as well, so I wonder if Trumbo would at times be that other guy. They still have Darryl Alvarez, Christian Walker on the 40-man. But you're right, they do want a plus defender, and I'm sure a guy that can move around, and Bourne will be that guy, and somebody else they're familiar with, because he ended the season with the Orioles, and they like him a lot. You know, Michael Saunders came off the board, and his defense really slipped, if you trust the metrics. So Bourne would make sense, but I still kind of wonder how it's going to work out if you do need to platoon when you have two left-handed corner outfielders. But, yeah, Bourne makes sense for his defense, speed, and again, the left-handed bat that Dan is looking for.
Well, and if you go along those lines, and I agree with your premise, Kim rarely faced left-handed pitching last year. So unless they're going to go ahead and say, okay, show us in spring training you could do it, and maybe you won't be a platoon player. But let's for the moment assume he will be, and he won't start against lefties. All right, Joey Rickard plays that day. But you just pointed out Seth Smith also struggles against lefties.
Right.
So it would make sense to have another right-handed bat. The right-handed bats are platoon guys. Joey's the defensive replacement for Kim late in games in which he goes ahead and starts. And even though the power is Trumbo's a right-handed batter, Manny's a right-handed batter, Jones, Scope, the catcher will be a right-handed batter. So that's five already. But it gives you more balance if you have another righty to being a platoon in the outfield.
It does. And, you know, Buck likes, if he can, kind of go on the left, right to break them up. And if you try doing that, you kind of reach after maybe the fifth spot where it's just right the whole way down. So, yeah, they could use another left-handed bat. But I think this would be the perfect time to find out if Kim can hit lefties, because we already know there's a track record with Seth Smith. His career numbers say don't do that. Kim, we don't know at this level. In Korea, there were a couple seasons where he hit left-handers very well. There were some others where the numbers were down. Either way, it's the KBO. We need to find out here if he can do it. He only had 17 or 18 at-bats against him. So let's find out now. That would make life a lot simpler if you could leave him in the lineup and then just worry about the platoon in right field.
And the one player I think this instantly affects is Trey Mancini, because he's too valuable a prospect to sit around and pinch hit. So it likely could mean, of course, injuries and spring training can change this, but it looks like he probably will go back to AAA and be the everyday first baseman and continue to work on his defense.
Yeah, I'm curious because, you know, you talk to people with the Orioles and they say he has nothing else to prove at that level and there's no foray. So you may as well give him a shot in the majors. And I've said, well, would you rather have him playing every day, though, in AAA than platooning or just being a bench guy in the majors? I never got a clear answer like, well, you know, either way. But I sense that right now there's some people that are still leaning toward, let's have him break camp. That's still a nice bat to have coming off the bench, and they'll find ways to get in the lineup. Buck indicated at the mini camp that there really weren't any plans to try him in the outfield at this point. But then when I talked to Brady Anderson, and Mancini's one of the guys in California working out with him, he's like, I think it would benefit him, obviously, to be able to play multiple positions, and he would like to see him get that chance. There's some questions about his arm, but you know, if you plan on carrying him, then you may as well kind of take a look anywhere you can to see if there are ways to get him in the lineup. So I'm not clear yet on whether they would prefer having him play every day. I think there are people who don't think it would stunt his development to be at this level and be that guy who comes off the bench and plays sporadically.
Well, it would sure help him if he could play the outfield.
It really would.
Yeah, because then there's an option every time he faces a lefty, he starts. You can start him against certain right-handed pitchers because he can hit either side. I mean, he's just a flat-out hitter. So Mark Trumbo is on his way back. Rock got it confirmed. A three-year deal. We don't know the money, but it's been reported less than $40 million. So Dan Duquette waited out the market. Mark Trumbo decided to come back where he loves to play and certainly had a career year. And Mark Trumbo will be back with the Birds. Three-year deal to come back. Before we break, I briefly want to talk to you about the Hall of Fame class that was announced yesterday. You are a Hall of Fame voter. Three get in, Tim Raines, Jeff Bagwell, and Pudgy Von Rodriguez. Were you surprised that three got in, and did you vote for those three?
I did, and the only reason I was surprised is, you know, the writers, including myself, you reveal your ballot ahead of time, and there's somebody or a couple people, actually, that collect them all. And it looked like Rodriguez wasn't going to get the necessary 75%. Then all of a sudden yesterday, I guess as more writers were making their ballots public, that wave all of a sudden I saw, well, he's actually above 75%. Like, when did that happen? So that surprised me. It was just because the people who hadn't revealed their ballots yet had voted for him, and he certainly deserved it. I thought he should have. I thought all three did, clearly, because I voted for him. Why it took Raines 10 years, I don't know, the theory being maybe, well, Ricky Henderson was the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, and people say, well, Tim Raines was the second, but he played in that shadow of Ricky Henderson. Maybe not a lot of people watch Montreal Expos games. I don't know, but when you look at the body of work, it's like, yeah, that's a Hall of Fame career. And same with Bagwell. It took him seven tries, and there were the suspicions of PEDs, but it was never proven. He never failed a test. He didn't appear in a book. It was just, well, you know, he's one of those guys like Piazza. There are whispers. Well, to me, that's not a good enough reason to leave him out. And clearly his numbers said he should have been in. And, you know, Rodriguez was such a weapon behind the plate, I remember, and I've talked about this. Buck Showalter said in Texas, his pitchers had horrible times to home plate because they didn't need to be quick because Rodriguez was throwing guys out from his knees. After Rodriguez left, all of a sudden it was like, uh-oh, we have a problem. We have pitchers who don't hold runners and are slow to the plate, and we don't have that weapon behind the plate now to throw these guys out. And they had to suddenly redo the pitching staff or work with guys and make them quicker.
So Ivan Rodriguez gets just enough votes. You needed 75%. He got 76%. And Trevor Hoffman, 74%. I understand it was a difference of five votes if he got five more votes. And all he did was save 601 games in an 18-year career. What else does he need to prove?
Right. So maybe he pitched in the shadow of Mariano Rivera. I don't know. I mean, there are voters, though, and I'm surprised at this point he was even that close because there are a lot of voters that say, ah, closer, that's a specialist role. They look at it like the place kicker or punter, and, you know, I'm not going to put a guy like that in the Hall of Fame, or he's a bubble guy, and if I vote for him, then I got to vote for Billy Wagner. So they just go ahead and leave both of them off, and I look at it again. It's like his numbers say he should be in, and I think there's even greater value and appreciation now placed with closers, and we saw what they're getting paid on the market, and we see how important what Zach Britton meant to this club. This club doesn't make the playoffs unless he's perfect.
Right.
So closers now are suddenly getting the credit maybe that they finally deserve, and I think, you know, more people now are going to start voting for Hoffman, but there are still those that say, no, I'm not going to vote for a reliever, I'm not going to vote for a closer, unless it's Mariano Rivera.
Well, if you look back to last year, the Yankees had Aroldis Chapman and they had Andrew Miller on their staff. Miller was signed as a closer initially, but then when they made the trade for Chapman, they said, we need you in a setup role, and he was fine with that, although he did close when Chapman was suspended. And then they get traded for four prospects each. The Yankees got eight prospects for two guys because they were closers. And one of them won the World Series, and one of them lost in the World Series. So if the voters don't believe that that is a very important position, why do teams value it so much? And the truth of the matter is because that is a very important position.
And you look at the Nationals down the road here, they're not sure who's closing right now. They may end up going in-house, which surprises me because what they invest in, the rotation, position players, it's be kind of odd to go into a season. And the way they pursued guys at the winter meetings, the money they were willing to spend, to suddenly say, you know, we're just going to go in-house. I can't see them taking that chance. But you look who's left on the market, Greg Holland, and then Jabba Chamberlain, Tommy Hunter. I mean, they're pretty much there aren't any other choices now. And you may end up having to go ahead and go in-house or try and swing a deal. So there are still teams that are looking to find that closer. And that's why the Orioles are sitting there on Zach Britton. They won't listen on him. But Brad Brock drew a lot of interest because there are teams, he closed in the minors and was very good, and there are teams that think he could close in the bigs. When Darren O'Day was a free agent, a team like the Nationals pursued him thinking he's a closer, and the Orioles themselves think Michael Gibbons one day could close. So they've got a lot of guys in that bullpen who could probably do that job, beyond Britton.
Mike Mussina got more support, but not certainly enough. He was in the 50s, so certainly not near the support. And what may be hurting him is if you look at his career, his winning percentage with the Orioles was actually better than his winning percentage with the Yankees. And on the Yankees, he was on a playoff team every year. So I'm sure there are some voters looking at that even though he did win 270 games, two more than Jim Palmer, maybe he's one of those fringe guys. But I'm sure as the years go by, since he keeps getting more votes, he'll continue to get more votes. Okay, we'll take a break. Hot Stove Baseball, we're at Dempsey's. When we come back, we'll hear from Donnie Hart. And a little bit later on, Zach Britton calls in on 105.7 The Fan. And welcome back. Donnie Hart is coming up. But first, we want to remind you that tickets for Orioles Fan Fest presented by Visit Sarasota County are on sale now. Just go to Orioles.com/FanFest. Baseball season begins next Saturday, January 28th, right here across the street at the Baltimore Convention Center. It's a day-long celebration of all things Birdland. Enjoy interactive Q&A sessions with your favorite players, coaches, and team execs, plus memorabilia sales, clinics, games, clubhouse tours, and more. For tickets and updated autograph information, visit Orioles.com/FanFest. Jim and Rock, we're at Dempsey's at the ballpark. Rock, feverishly writing in between breaks with the news that Mark Trumbo has agreed to a three-year contract, and Rock confirming with all his plethora of sources. And now we're going to welcome in from his home in Texas, Donnie Hart, who last year broke in during the season and did a great job, and should have a good chance to be in that bullpen again this year. Donnie, Jim Hunter, and Rock Cabaco, how are you, sir?
What's going on, guys? How are y'all?
Well, we're waiting for FanFest. It's a week away, so we're getting anxious. We want to see some of the fellas come back, and I'm assuming you're going to be there, right?
Yes, I will be there, and I'm just as excited about it as y'all are. It's my first one.
That's a good point. All right, I want to go back to your major league debut last year. Now, here you were a 27th round draft pick when you came out of Texas State back in 2013, and even though you were a college player, the Orioles brought you along very slowly as if they would a high school player, even though you weren't a starter. I mean, you've never started a game in your career. What was that moment like when all the effort that you put in the minor leagues, not knowing how high you could even go as a 27th round pick, that here you were pitching in a major league game for a contending team?
Yeah, it was special for sure. It's probably one of the most common questions I get from, people that know me, and I tell them every time it's really hard to put into words because, as a little kid, you dream about it, and then as you grow up and you get drafted, you kind of realize that you can kind of almost see the light at the end of the tunnel, but it's, so far away for some of us. And then finally just kind of be able to walk through those clubhouse doors and then walk out on the stadium and pitch, on a big league mound against big league hitters. It was special. That's definitely for sure.
And I think even beyond that, the fact that your family was there, and we know ball players, the parents have to drive them all the club games and things like that. But I think the moment that was most special to me, you are twins and your sister was there. And when you got a strikeout in the two outs you got, your first big league strikeout, and the Masson cameras had a nice close-up of her, and she was crying with happiness for your success. That had to be something that you're able to share with your twin that goes beyond just making it to the big leagues.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like you said, she's my twin. We grew up doing everything together. We share that bond, and she never really played any sports, but she was always there to support me. And so I've always been thankful for that, and to see her be that happy was it's another one of those things. That's why you play the game. It's obviously you want to achieve your goals, but a lot of times, As yourself, you make those goals to make sure that people that helped you along the way, you see it through, that they can see, achieve what you were trying to do. So that was a real special moment for myself and my family, and obviously her as well.
Donnie, we've been talking a lot about Mark Trumbo, the Orioles, an agreement with him on a three-year deal, and it's now being reported for $37.5 million. In the brief time, relatively brief time that you were with him, how would you describe him as a teammate, what he was like in the clubhouse?
Well, first of all, that's the first I've ever heard of that. If that's true, that's awesome.
Breaking news.
Mark, that's the first time I heard that. That's awesome. But yeah, I mean, Mark's a good guy. Mark, he's a quiet guy. He's a quiet leader. That's for sure. He's a very intense competitor. I know there's times when I was in the dugout in between innings, you know, when I came off the mound, that he's one of those guys that when he walks by you, you kind of know to, you know, just keep yourself, and that he doesn't need anybody to tell him, you know, that he's doing a good job or a nice job, you know, whatnot. You know, he's one of those guys that when he speaks, you listen. He's got the numbers to prove it, obviously, on the field, but in the clubhouse, you know, he's a great guy. He's nice to everybody. He's welcoming to everybody. And, you know, if it's true that he's coming back, that's awesome. You know, I'm super excited about that.
Now, getting back to you, Jim was talking about, you know, the debut. What do you remember about the appearance in the wild card game? I mean, considering you come up from double A and all of a sudden here you are, biggest game of the year, one batter, seven pitches to Melvin Upton was pinch hitting for Michael Saunders, and you get the fly ball. What do you remember about that experience, what you were feeling?
Yeah, so I think the moment that stands out the most to me was, you know, when I got to the field, I'd had breakfast with Darren. I kind of ran into him in the lobby. I was going to eat breakfast, and he was going at the same time, and so we ended up going to eat together. And him and I just had a little conversation about, not being too invested into every single pitch. And Zach and I had the same conversation later on in the day as well. That was similar, but he kind of sat me down and told me, you know, we wouldn't obviously be here if it wasn't for everybody that's on this team right now and the things that they did, and you know, that kind of eased my mind a little bit, not to put too much more into what the situation really is. But you know, other than that, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing that stuck out to me, because it kind of eased my mind a little bit. But you know, once you get the call down in the bullpen and they say, you know, we need you to get ready, and you're going to face so and so, or you're going to come in this part of the inning. I think your natural competitive instinct just kind of kicks in, and you rely on that, and then you just try to go in and do your job. But that was a really cool experience. That's probably the loudest stadium I've ever had to pitch in for my entire life.
Now, Donnie, Alan Mills will be the bullpen coach this year in the big leagues, and you have a long track record with him, and this is very much a game of relationships and trusting coaches and coaches trusting players. You reached double A in 2015. You were at double A for two stints this year around your two times with the Orioles. And I know you're very fond of all the things that you learned from Alan about what it would take to compete in the big leagues. Now that you have that experience, when you think back, was he right on the money with what he told you and how to be prepared?
Yeah. It's one of those things, whenever you have a pitching coach, you know, he tells you certain things, and you're kind of like, yeah, whatever. He's just trying to, he's just trying to get me to feel better about myself and all that kind of stuff. And there was one point where, I think it was earlier in the year, where, we were sitting down on the road. I think I was sitting down with Tolliver, and this is before Tolliver got called up too. And he sat down and he looked at both of us, and he just kind of stared at us, and Tolliver and I kind of looked at each other and like, you know, what's going on, Millsy? And he goes, nothing. Just want to stop by and see how you guys doing. And you know, we said, well, we're doing good. You doing all right? And he goes, do you guys realize you're both big league pitchers? And we both just kind of looked at each other and laughed. And then, you know, I don't think it was like a month later, Tolliver got called up to the big leagues. And I said, well, Mills, you got one of them right. And then sure enough, you know, a month later, 2 months later, I got called up. And, you know, I made sure that he was one of the first people to know that, you know, that I was getting called up to the big leagues, because, you know, I've had him since my rookie year, and I've had him every year that I've been with the Orioles and in pro baseball. And, you know, he's a pretty special person to me in my career.
Now, Asher told us the story about how he was told he was coming up. The entire clubhouse was called into a team meeting after a game. What was it like for you when you found out? Was it more private, or was it public where you were in the clubhouse around your teammates?
Yeah, no, mine was more private. Mine was a phone call. I just happened to be, we were on the bus. It was during the All-Star break. I just happened to be with Mills too. And so that was, you know, that was obviously one of the more important things for me, was to make sure that he knew, because he didn't know either. But, it wasn't in the clubhouse. It was more private. So it was a little easier for me to handle than it was for everybody one time to figure it out.
Roger McDowell had said that he's been trying to reach out to as many pitchers as he can on the 40-man. Have you had a chance to talk to him yet? And if so, what were your early impressions?
I have. I talked to him probably about a month ago. He called me. And we just kind of chit-chatted and told me about him and who he was and you know, where he grew up and where he's at now and talked a little about his family. And then, I kind of did the same thing with him. And he seems like a really good dude. From the conversations I had with him, he seems like he's going to be a lot of fun to work with. He knows a lot about the game from what I can tell from our phone conversation, just a little bit that we talk. And I'm really looking forward to working with him and then having Bills there as well and working with those two.
I know you weren't at the mini camp this month, but how did the mini camp help you, or how did you benefit from that last one? It seemed like that's really where you first got noticed.
Yeah, it was more of a thing for me mentally to kind of wake me up in the middle of the off season and let me know like, hey, you're here for a reason. Obviously they see something, what it is, I didn't know at the time. But they want to see, if you're worthy of pitching in the big leagues, and so it was kind of one of those deals. It was good to be able to meet Dom and Dave at the time and kind of get to talk to them because I'd never met them before. And also get in front of the manager and have a conversation with him and introduce myself to him and kind of let him know what I'm about and just being around those guys and being able to talk baseball with them and then kind of being able to figure out who I am and me figuring out who they were. So, I mean, it was helpful for sure because when I came to spring training and got a chance to pitch in some good games, it wasn't a total culture shock for me to walk into the clubhouse and not know who anybody was.
Donnie Hart, who earned his way to the big leagues last year and expected to be in the bullpen again this year, joining us from his home. And Donnie, no reliever likes to be tagged as a specialist, even though there are specialists in the game that are very important to winning games. You absolutely dominated left-handed hitters, being a lefty. Righties sit just about 300, maybe about 160 points higher. But one of the things I noticed that you got into 22 games and five times Buck used you for more than one inning. So what that tells me is they have enough trust in your stuff overall to get right-handed hitters out. Now, what will you do this year to try to keep that batting average a little lower against the righties?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, and I talked to some of the guys in the bullpen this year about it too, and just kind of picking their brains about how they go against opposite-handed hitters themselves. And one of the things I wanted to really work on was my slider to righties. Because, for the most part, I just defended myself with a fastball and a changeup against righties. I really wanted to use my slider against those guys and see what it would do. But, I didn't want to get in the game and, be experimenting with a pitch in a big league game against those kind of hitters. So it was one of those things where I kind of had to learn and try to see when other guys used it and how guys went about it and what kind of hitters they used it against. So that's definitely one of the things I want to work on when I come into spring training and try to refine and get good at and see if it works. And if it works, that's awesome. But if not, I'm going to have to pick some more brains and try to figure out what else I can do to make sure that I can defend myself against those right-handed hitters.
Well, that is a good approach, but you may be in an interesting spot because even though you ended the year on the team, you do have to show that you belong on this year's team. So here you got to experiment a little bit. And I remember one spring training, Scott Erickson was an established major leaguer, but Ray Miller wanted him to throw his changeup more. And Miller told Chris Hoyles in an exhibition game against the Dodgers, call the changeup every other pitch. I don't care about the results. And he got absolutely chilled, and Erickson never threw the changeup again. But you're going to have to understand that as you're working on that, you may get hit around a little bit. And the hope is that the ball club understands that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely one of the fine lines that you walk whenever you're trying to make a team, and that's certainly what I'm going to go into spring training trying to do. And it's one of those things where you have to be in communication with the pitching coach, the bullpen coach, and the manager, and kind of let them know what's going on and what you're trying to work on and what they see, and see if they see the same thing, and if they do, then it's good. If not, then you got to try to figure out what they're trying to see as well and make sure that you can prove that to them. And so, that's the conversation that obviously I'll have to have whenever spring training rolls around and we all start reporting here in a month. So, I'm looking forward to it. That's definitely for sure.
Well, Donnie, we appreciate the call. We'll look forward to seeing you here in Baltimore next week for Fan Fest. I know that'll be a lot of fun for you with maybe 20,000 Oriole fans in attendance at the convention center. So continue the good work in the off season, and we really appreciate getting caught up with you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's Donnie Hart joining us from his home, and really he burst on the scene. And here Asher Tolliver did the same, but he was even more effective.
He was, and it really has to make every player, pitcher, position player at Bowie feel good. Because it's double A, not triple A, but you can get that phone call. The Orioles have no problem, Michael Gibbons an example, of bringing guys up from there. If you're putting up the numbers and there's a need, they're not just looking above you. They'll look in the Eastern League.
All right, so Donnie Hart joining us here on Hot Stove. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Zach Britton will join us from his home in California. 47 out of 47 in saves. Stay with us right here on 105.7 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove Show. An hour-long look at baseball and the offseason with Jim Hunter on the flagship station of the Orioles. 105.7 The Fan.
And we invite you to plan your Birdland summer now. Secure your Orioles full or partial season ticket plan. Season plan members at every level enjoy dramatic savings over the cost of single-game tickets, plus a full lineup of exclusive orange carpet benefits, including baseball's most flexible exchange policy, access to opening day, and more. Partial plans come at a variety of price points and are the best way to lock in your spot for all the action of the upcoming season. Get your seats now. Visit Orioles.com or, if you prefer, 888-848-BIRD. Jim and Rockward Dempsey's at the ballpark. Heard from Donnie Hart, Zach Britton coming up. And we want to remind you that next week, which will be 2 days before FanFest, Caleb Joseph and Brad Brock will be with us here at the restaurant. So we have a lot of fans here tonight. You want to plan to come out, make your plans now. Caleb and Brad, a couple of good guys, so that'll be fun, Rock, to have them here at the restaurant. And now we'll head out to California to see how those Brady Anderson workouts are going. Zach Britton, the Orioles closer, who just turned 29, joins us. Zach, it's Jim and Rock. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing great. Happy New Year. And how are the workouts going with Brady Anderson? I understand he doesn't take it easy on you guys.
No, not at all. We actually, me and Chris, we had been living in Sarasota for a while now, so the last 2 years. So we've been out there kind of transitioning at the, you know, we have a great facility in Sarasota, so we take advantage of that. I think probably one of the best spring training facilities you're going to find. So there's no one in that gym during the off season, so me and Chris like to get down there and kind of have that whole space to ourselves. And we work out with Ryan Driscoll down there, who's kind of everyone's an extension from Brady, and that's the cool thing about our organization, whether it's the big league staff or the minor league staff. Everyone's kind of an extension of one another, so they're all on the same page when it comes to our workouts.
Now, Zach, now that you've had a few months to look back on your 2016 season, you go 47 out of 47 in save opportunities, and as Rock pointed out, one blown save, as it turned out, the Orioles would not have made the playoffs. How do you feel about what you were able to do, and do you realize now that you're a little bit removed from it just how special it was?
Yeah, you know, yeah, definitely, you know, when I got home, I got a chance to kind of sit back and think about it. Obviously, you got to hear a lot about it, you know, towards the end. But, you know, it was pretty special, but a lot of things happened in order for me to put together that season. You know, you have a good team, a good defense behind you, you know, good catches calling good games. And, sorry, I got a helicopter buzzing over me for some reason.
It's like Goodfellas.
I don't know what this guy's doing. But... No, back to the season. Yeah, you know, it was a fun season, and you know, obviously, I don't take it lightly because that's pretty special for that to happen. But like I said, you know, if Michael Bourne and Manny don't relay that one ball and throw the guy that played against the Rays, you know, we're not talking about it too. I mean, so there's things that not only I did, but my teammates around me just to help me put together that season.
I really hope that helicopter isn't following you. I've had enough work to do tonight, so
I know, right? Like, hey, stick rock on you. Get out of here.
Exactly. Hey, so how do you improve on perfect? I mean, you have to go 48 for 48. I mean, you have raised the bar quite a bit.
You know what? I've thought about it a little bit. You know, every season you go in, you want to be perfect or you try to be perfect. But, I mean, the numbers, you know, I guess, you know, show that, you know, yeah, I can convert all the saves opportunities I had. But I think there's still things that I can improve on. I mean, no season's ever just perfect down to every little thing that you did. Whether that's, you know, finding you know, something else in my routine to get me prepared for games or, you know, sometimes pitch selection. You know, hitters are going to make adjustments on me, and, you know, I got to constantly make adjustments, I think, if you want to be successful, you know, every year. know, you got to do something different. Your body's different every year. The hitters are different every year. The circumstances that you come into games are, you know, different every year. So you can never be complacent. So I have a lot of things that I want to adjust going forward, but the same core principles are there, and those are things that I've developed the last three years, you know, working out with Brady. You know, that's a starting point. Your off-season workouts are kind of your foundation. So, you know, they all work together, and there's still areas that I want to improve on. But I was very happy with the season last year, but I'm trying to now turn the page and get ready and see what I got to do to be successful this next year.
I saw your tweet where you were hoping the Trumbo news was true, and it is. He did agree 3 years, $37.5 million, which sounds like a bargain to me. It's not my money, but for a guy who led the majors with 47 home runs. And I asked Donnie Hart the same question earlier in this program, but how would you describe what kind of teammate Mark Trumbo is, what he means to the ball club, beyond just the home runs?
Yeah, he's a great teammate. You know, he's kind of like the quiet leader, but the thing about Mark that kind of really drew me to him, and the thing I feel like kind of got overlooked was his preparation and the work that he put in. He was constantly watching video, constantly in the cage doing stuff. I mean, even before a lot of guys even showed up to the field, Mark was already in there doing stuff. And that's things that I think as a teammate, you go, you know what? You know, whether or not this guy is doing well or struggling, you appreciate the effort that they're putting in. And I think that's all you can bring to the table as a teammate is your effort level every single day. And that wasn't lacking ever. And like I said, I think that really impressed me. There's guys that you play with through the course of your career that something really stands out. And that really stood out for me of Mark was how he got to the field every day. And there was a rhyme to the reason. You know, everything that he did was calculated. It's kind of like a guy when you play like Andrew Miller or guys like J.J. Hardy, Adam Jones. You know, there's something about those guys. There's a reason why they play so long, first off, and the reason why they're so successful. There's just something about them and the routine. And I try to pick that up off of everybody I play with, so I can extend my career as well. But, you know, Mark is going to be, you know, a great clubhouse presence, but at the same time, I know our ballpark's perfect for him. That's why it's crucial, you know, to get CD back last year and to get Mark again this year, to keep that power in the lineup, really important.
Now, Zach, I know players always hope to get on a roll where the game slows down and it becomes a little easier. And your season, I think, even more remarkable than being perfect in saves. You got in 69 games and allowed only runs in five games, five of the 69. And one of those games, it was a 3-under and run, so plays made behind you, you probably don't even allow there. But I think the bigger thing was from May 5th to August 22nd, that's 43 games, not one single run allowed. Now, does that even surprise you that you were able to be that consistent and that successful for that long of a stretch?
I mean, yeah, because it's the big leagues, right? And they get paid to score runs. But, you know, my wife was joking with me a couple times. She's like, well, why don't you not just give up a whole run the whole season? I said, well, if it was that easy, I think more people would do it. You know, it's not easy. So I tried not to think about it, in all honesty. I mean, you know, we're human, so obviously I knew what was going on. But, well, you know, when I got to the field or even when I was warming up to go in before an outing, in my head, I just had an idea of this is what I wanted to do to every single hitter. Obviously, I have the chance to kind of look at the lineup and know who I'm probably going to face and, you know, the pinch hitters. So I kind of just had a game plan. Every single hitter, this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, if I get beat doing it, I get beat, but I'm going to stick to it. And I felt like this was the first year that I've ever had that plan and actually stuck with it. There's times where you want to do something, you get into the game, and for some reason or another, you kind of get away from what you wanted to do. And I told myself this year that, you know, I'm not going to give in. I'm going to do, you know, kind of what I prepared to do. You know, in my scouting report, I'm going to execute the way I wanted to execute. You know, when I was down the bullpen running it through my head, I'm going to do it and take it out to the game. And I did, and I found some success. Not saying that I'm going to be perfect again next year, but for some reason this year, you know, putting that into action allowed me to be consistent.
Well, and I think the other aspect of this is, as a closer, you need to keep the ball in the ballpark. Very often you're protecting a one-run lead, so a home run ties the game. And here you go out and allow just one home run the entire year. I'm sure you remember Mookie Betts at Fenway took you out April 11th. That was your fourth appearance of the year, by the way. So I'm assuming that's in large part because of your repertoire and the fact that your power sinker was so effective that even if the contact was made, it's hard to get it airborne.
Yeah, I'm just happy Mookie Betts had a pretty good year, right? He had a decent year. Next year a little bit better to swallow.
No shame.
No shame, right? He got a lot of people, I think. But, yeah, you know, I think it's something that is beneficial. I think as the later in the game you pitch. I think, you know, if you can keep the ball in the ballpark, especially when hitters late in the game, a lot of them want to do some damage and make something happen or win a ball game with one swing. So you kind of use that to your advantage. And yeah, I mean, the big thing for me is not necessarily strikeouts, is getting the ball on the ground and allowing our defense to make plays. When you have a great defense like ours, it obviously makes it easier too to do that. But I think it's important, especially in the role that I've been pitching in the last few years now, to keep the ball in the play. And, you know, if one gets through, you know, sometimes it takes three singles to beat you or four singles to beat you, and I think that's better than, you know, one big swing. Obviously, the odds are a little bit more in your favor when you can do that.
So there was no drama at the non-tender deadline as far as you were concerned. Obviously, you were going to be tendered a contract, but there was a question whether you would sign before a hearing. Did you assume it was going to get done? Are you relieved that it got done when it did? And could there be extension talks, you think, during the season? I know that there was some talk when there were negotiations for the 2017 contract, but they didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, you know what? Surprised, I guess this year I felt like I was always the last person to get done. So, yeah, I was definitely excited to not have to deal with that. We knew the Orioles' position. I guess they were filing trial with a lot of guys. So a lot of times that's kind of just, you know, speeds up the process to an extent. But we had great negotiations. You know, Scott Boras and Dan have always, you know, had good discussions, and I think it carried over into this year. We didn't really have anything that we felt like was going to be a sticking point to where we needed to go to a hearing, which was nice to know, you know, right away. And we did, yeah, we did talk about, you know, maybe a longer-term deal, and it kind of maybe got put on the back burner a little bit so we get the one-year deal out of the way. But it's something I'm definitely interested in. You know, obviously, I'm not sure what the Orioles' plans are, you know, long-term, you know, for me, but I know that they have my rights for, you know, another season. So, you know, worst case scenario, I'm still here for another year. But obviously I'd like to extend that and be with the Orioles, you know, my whole career. I've been here since I was 18. So maybe it would be kind of weird if I feel like to go anywhere else. But like I said, a lot of that has to do with what the team wants to do going forward. And, hopefully we can, you know, maybe start talks up later when, you know, when they wrap up contracts with everybody else.
Well, and it also seems good because, you know, you keep Trumbo, you're here, the bullpen's still great, and the team is built to win now, so now it's just a matter of going out and doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have some really good talent in place, and we got some young talent that can fill in some pieces, you know, some areas of the team where we need them to fill in, too. And a lot of that, you know, you got to be so patient with young guys, too. I feel like we put so much pressure on those guys to come up and be the guy right away, and it's not really fair to them. And you know, we kind of did that to Gosman a little bit right away, and then, you know, we let him breathe a little bit last year, and you see what he's capable of doing. You know, Bundy not putting a lot of pressure on him to an extent last year, but he did a heck of a job, and I think that's going to only improve the team, too, going forward. And then, obviously, Tillman has been really, really consistent. I feel like he kind of gets overlooked a little bit and what he brings to the table. But, you know, he's a solid guy in that rotation. And in our bullpen, coming all the way back, which is really nice. You know, I think, you know, Donnie Hart, I'm really excited to see what he's going to do for a full season. He's an intriguing guy, you know. He's like a hybrid Darren, left-handed Darren, you know. But he just brings something to the table. But those guys are always always nice to have in the bullpen. It's just a different look for hitters. So I'm excited about what we bring to the table as a team, you know. Obviously not, you know, probably having Matt back. I'm not exactly sure how that's going, but you know, interested to see Castillo. You know, talking with Jake Arrieta, he had nothing but good things to say about him. You know, he played with him in the Cubs, so he said that we'll definitely like him. He's improved a lot, I guess, over the years, so I'm excited to meet him. And obviously, Caleb's been a guy I've thrown to for years since I was a minor, so I love throwing to Caleb. So I'm excited to see what happens this year.
All right, well, Zach, we really appreciate the time. Best of luck for, as Rock said, you got to go 48 out of 48 this year. It'll be a disappointing season.
Thanks, Rock.
So we'll look forward to seeing you next week here at FanFest, and give our best to Chris Tillman down there and keep working out hard.
All right, sounds good, guys. I'll see you soon.
All right, that's Zach Britton, and just amazing. Think about that. He gets in 69 games. He allowed runs in just 5 of the 69, and one of those games it was 3 unearned runs.
Right.
So earned runs in 4 of 69 appearances, just remarkable.
It was historic. It really was, and that's why I really thought he should have been a finalist for the Cy Young, but there are too many voters who don't think the relievers belong in that discussion because they don't put up enough innings, and they've got their own award. I disagree, and I know Buck Showalter, as you saw the quotes, was furious that he wasn't even a finalist.
All right, now you've been confirming during the show here, it is definitely a done deal. Mark Trumbull, 3 years. What was their term?
$37.5 million. It's just pending the physical, and there's no reason to believe that's going to be an issue. It's just a question of, you know, how long it takes to complete it and get the results back.
And what's great about the timing of this, it's a week before FanFest. Hopefully it gets done, and he can return as a hero now, because all the fans here, as soon as they heard the news, broke into applause. You know he's going to get a good round of applause at FanFest.
As soon as they set the autograph stations, this has to happen. I've got to squeeze him in there, I guess.
All right, now next week, right back here at Dempsey's, 2 days before FanFest, Caleb Joseph and Brad Brock will be with us here at the restaurant. That's going to be a lot of fun. Brad Brock became an all-star this year, and Caleb goes into the year with a big old chip on his shoulder.
He does. He's got something to prove. He knows he's better than what he showed at the plate.
All right, so Rakabako breaking the news as we went on the air, had to confirm Mark Trumbull re-signs with the Orioles. 3-year deal for $37.5 million, and we appreciate everybody at Dempsey's coming out here on this Thursday night. Back at it next Thursday, another edition of Hot Stove Baseball. And again, Brad Brock and Caleb Joseph with us here at the restaurant. For Rakabako, Jim Hunter, have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next week on 105.7.